Accession number 29537, Mr. Albert Arndt, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Arndt?
I was born on the 16th of February, 1925, a town called Erfurt, which is sort of in the centre of Germany, very near the Thuringer Forest, because the county where Erfurt is in is called Thuringia or Thuringen, which is called the Green Heart of Germany, or at least it was called like this at the time.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Right. My father, at the time of my birth, he was a travelling salesman. He worked in the sort of the catering industry. He went round to sell probably machinery and whatever. My mother unfortunately died when I was 3 years old, Boxing Day 1928. I can't really remember anything in particular. I just remember very faintly something was happening in the household, in our house, but I didn't quite know what it was.
Now, how did your father cope?
My father coped in the way that my mother's sister, my aunt, Greta, she lived near the Harz Mountains, and we had a very good relationship with these people, and my uncle Paul as well. And I remember faintly that as my father had to work, carry on working to keep things moving, as it were, I spent at least 2, possibly 3 years with my aunt under her care. And I had a very, very wonderful time. They were lovely people, caring people. And my cousin Ruth, that was their daughter, she was then a teenager, and she sort of looked after me and took me here and there. And that happened till round about 1931, when my father remarried. And then at the same time he started his own business. He opened up a shoe shop and leather goods.
And where was that? Was that in Erfurt?
That was not in Erfurt. That was in a small market town called Waltershausen. Like Walter Waltershausen. It's a market town of about 10,000 inhabitants. It's roughly 50 or so kilometres away from Erfurt on the foot of the Thuringer Mountains.
So still in the Thuringen?
Yes, that is still in the same county.
Now, was your father reasonably well off? I mean, how comfortably off was the family?
My father, we were never rich. I fairly remembered, and all, of course, from things which I have learned later on, there were problems, probably usual business problems, money problems, but nothing very terrible. I mean, we had a reasonable good living. We had everything we needed. Of course, see, my father, I had a brother, actually, for my father's first marriage. See, my father was married 3 times. His first 2 wives had died, unfortunately. And I had an older brother. He was 9 years older than I was by his first wife.
Now, what about your education? What do you remember about that? Was that at Waltershausen?
Yes, yes.
Tell us about it. I went to German schools, how they work.
I was six. I started school in Waltershausen. There was only really one school. There was a complex of 3 buildings in sort of a square. One was for the infants and one was for the juniors, I suppose. And we had always mixed classes up to 14 years of age. We were still boys and girls. You know, one side of the class was the girls and the other side was the boys. It was the school was called Volksschule, so it's an elementary schools, and we went through this all these years until I was 14.
Now, what was the education like? Can you describe sort of what subjects you did and the sort of teaching method?
Well, we had subjects like German, then arithmetic. We had, believe it or not, we had religious instructions once a week. We've had history, we've had geography, and then of course in English there were essays to write and dictations to take down on which you got your marks, which included also, and I feel that is important really, is also handwriting. You got marks for handwriting. You know, I mean, mine isn't terribly good. It's not bad, but it's
pretty
not
good in this book, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you went through all these years, and then you stepped up in the next class, and that went on until you were 14 years old.
Was there a qualification, or
well, we had, there were no sort of yearly or half yearly examinations. You were judged on your performance over the 12 months. Because, you know, some were good and some were bad, some were better and some not so good, but they took the average, I think, and on that you got your marks. I'm happy to say I was always very good in German. I was very good in dictation. I made very few mistakes. Arithmetic was reasonable. You know, I mean, you learn the three A's. We didn't have anything like adding up little machines and computers, and that obviously wasn't known then.
What about the other subjects? How did you do them?
I like geography because, you know, when we had a huge map through in geography lessons that was on sort of a stand. Oh, it must have been 6 foot high and 6 foot wide, and there was the whole Earth, the whole world on it. And I imagined travelling with my finger to these far away places, and that was so exciting. What else did we have? Religious instructions. We went through scripture. I was at that time not very keen on it. You know, looking back now, I'm still surprised that we had religious instructions. It was only one hour a week. Something was read from the Bible, a parable or something, and then we probably had to write something down. Of course, we had also, you know, the school times were so different.
Tell us about that, because the work...
During the summer, from April to October, school started at 7 and ended at 12 o'clock. During the winter time, school started at 8 and ended at 1300, at 1 p.m., right? We had twice during the week in the afternoon. We had 2 hour sport, which I think was Tuesdays. Sport, we did swimming or playing football, handball, and you know, the usual things. And we had also 2 hours gardening, that was on a Friday, because our school had a plot. So 10 minutes walk from the school outside, I would say roughly maybe 2 acres or something like this. And that was divided up in little plots, and each pupil, as it were, had his own little plot, maybe 4 foot wide and 10 foot long. And we were taught how to plant. We could choose what we wanted to grow, potatoes or carrots or cabbages. And we used to go every Friday afternoon to keep the plot tidy, to pull out the weeds, to water the plants. And we also had a little, what we call the zoo. Zoo. That was perhaps a little area, maybe 30 feet long, 15 feet wide. And there was a pit dug in it, which was laid out with bricks and stones. And in there lived lizards and grass snakes and frogs and creepy crawlies, things like that. When the autumn came, everything which was grown was shared out, and we were able to take it home. And I thought it was a nice way of doing it, because I mean, after all, we eat food, and and it is good to know how things grow. You know, even finding out sometimes why they don't grow. You do something wrong, or you've got insects on it, or maggots, or whatever. And I actually enjoy that. And that gardening has been sort of with me through all my life.
Now, what about the sport? We sort of glossed over. Were you interested in sport at school? Was there much sport?
Yes, there was a lot of sport, actually. I mean, apart from school times, of course, there were other games out of school times, like Saturdays or even Sundays. I did like athletics. I did the 100 metres, the 200 metres, the long jump. And then we had a small javelin to throw. I like that. But my favourite sport always has been swimming. And we had two outdoor swimming baths. One was quite a large one with a 10-foot diving tower where you could dive in. And in 1936, I took my certificate, which means you had to swim for 30 minutes without holding on anywhere. You had to jump down from the 3-meter diving board, whichever way you preferred, head first or feet first. And then you had to dive down, which was roughly about 8 foot, and pick up two bricks wrapped up in a white cloth and bring it to the surface. And if you had done that, you got your certificate. That means you were acknowledged as a swimmer and you could go in the deep end.
Did you do competitive swimming or...?
We did competitive swimming between, of course, joined the scouts.
I'll come back to that. Stick with the swimming.
Yeah.
What sort of competitive swimming?
Well, it was between different schools, between different classes, and also between different, what I call them, scout movement earlier on, which was later on, of course, all called Hitler Youth, as it is now. That usually was on a Sunday.
Was there any military training at all at school? You know, I mean, in Britain they have the OTC or cadets. Anything like that at Walterhausen?
Not until I was 14. Definitely nothing like this at all.
Now, outside of school, tell us about the Boy Scouts. Because when did you join the Boy Scouts?
I remember. When I was youngish, when I was a young boy, I was a little, I was a very quiet boy, standing a little bit too much in the background, I suppose, you know, sort of introvert. And my parents, sort of, who knew a scout leader, decided to take me there. And I remember the day when I was taken there and was greeted by the outfit. They had all their uniforms on, green shirts and black shorts and things. And they took me into the movement, and we learned things like how to make fires, you know, how to find the direction where we are going in the day, in the night, learning the compass and reading a map and things like that. And we used to go out quite a lot over weekends, marching out to different places, staying in youth hostels. And I actually took to it, and it sort of changed my life, really. Mixing.
Made you more extrovert, or less introvert, perhaps.
Less introvert. I lost a lot of shyness. Yes, and that was good.
Was there any military element within the Boy Scouts? I know later on they became the Hitler Youth.
Well, that was 1933, round about that time when I joined up. And then after a while, it was all called Hitler Youth. And now we were given different uniforms.
Now, when did that happen? Do you know? Not really.
Not really. I think between 33, 34, or thereabout.
Now, how did the Hitler Youth... I mean, what was the Hitler Youth... how did it change? I mean, tell us how the Hitler Youth were. Or did you leave them? Did you stay in them, or what?
No, I stayed. I stayed in them. We were not involved. I suppose it had to do where you lived. I mean, we lived in a small place near the mountains. there wasn't much going on, like having big rallies. And, you know, as you see, or reading books, or I've seen on the television, we didn't really have that. We had our own outfit, the local outfit. We had our home, what we called a home. It was like a hostel, a place where we met, where we were taught this and that.
Now, had the Boy Scouts gone?
So they had, oh, so yes.
They didn't, I
think we were called Pathfinders in the earlier, you know, movement. But no, it was all called Hitler Youth. It was from probably 10 onwards to 14. And then after 14, you could join either the Navy Scouts or Navy Hitler Youth, or the Motor Hitler Youth, or the flying, you know, they had gliders, they were instructed
so
in flying.
So tell us about the first period then. You'd meet at this, they had a place. Now what was this meeting place like? What was it?
Well, it was a fairly, fairly large house, an old building which had a yard, and that was shared between the young ones up to 14 and also the older ones up to, I would say, 17 or so. Because the older ones later on joined the Navy Hitler Youth, they had their own place where they learned flag signals, the Morse code, and anything to
so
that.
You'd meet at this place, and what was it like? We was all bedecked with the Hitler Youth banners and things. What was it like?
Well, that we had our own banners according to the sort of the platoons, if you like, or we belonged to. We had our own.
Well, tell me how it's organised, and that might help me understand. How was your? I mean, before you joined the naval Hitler Youth, how was the normal Hitler Youth organised into platoon? What was it?
Well, we were roughly, I would say, about 40-ish or so. And you had one main leader. And the 40 people were divided into groups of 10, if you like. And they had sort of a sub-leader. And sometimes we met all together. We sang songs. I can't really remember any. It's too long ago. And then we went into different rooms, you know, and taught different things by the sub leaders.
Now, what sort of things were you taught?
In the beginning, it was still to do with going out with, if you like, nature, knowing where you were, knowing where you had to go to, finding your way, reading maps, knowing how to read the compass. Then it becomes more difficult. What happens when you haven't got a compass? How do you know where to go? So we learned where the stars are, Stella Polaris, you know, the North Star. Once you know that one is north, and then you knew all the other directions. If you haven't got a compass and you can't see any stars, if it's daytime, how do you know where you are? So we had a watch. From your watch, you know exactly, you know, you put your little hand towards the sun at AM and so on. You always knew your direction. But if there wasn't any sun and there wasn't any compass, nothing, it was at night, how do you know where you were? Well, we were told, for instance, especially when you're in the woods, you go to a tree or into an area where there were lots of trees, and you look or feel on the trees and decide where there was always moss on it. That was of west, northwest, because of the weather. So we always knew roughly where we were. And I found this extremely interesting.
Now, in the early days, was there any politics, you know, or propaganda, whichever way you want to look?
Well, we were taught about Hitler's birthday. We were taught roughly about his life. I mean, he was born... Now, when was he born? I think it was in April. Was it 20th of April or something?
Something like that.
1889 somewhere. A place called Braunau that was in Austria on the River Inn. And I think he did painting. He was a painter. Now, he was in the First War, wasn't he? He was a corporal or something. And he earned the Iron Cross First Class, And later on he did some painting, I think. Then he went into politics. I mean, what does a boy of 10, 12 understand about politics?
Did they try and teach you? I mean, were they teaching you the essence of his beliefs?
We knew that he had written a book called Mein Kampf to write down all his ideas. But I've never seen one.
So they weren't teaching you his philosophy, or political philosophy. They were teaching you about him.
Possibly, but in a mild way, a way probably young people would understand. And in 1933, you know, when he became chancellor, when Hindenburg then died and all that, we were, of course, told, or it was pointed out, all the lovely things he did. Now, I remember faintly, around that time, 32, 33, it was after the great inflation in Germany in the late 20s, there were, 7, 10 million people out of work. Things were not good. Now, he said, well, I'll give you work, I'll give you bread and butter. Now, he built autobahns, he built houses for people to live in. Then he started, that came a little later, probably 36 or then, about the Volkswagen, you know, the old Beetle. And we could see that people had work. He got industry going. There were better roads. People had work. He did a lot for the farmers. Agriculture, because it's important, isn't it? I mean, agriculture, the country has to feed itself. It seemed okay. And I suppose, even then in my mind, not understanding anything about politics, I sort of pictured, well, if there are all these people having no work, and there comes a man and says, look, I will give you work, and he did provide places of work, where people earned money, where they could live, could eat. And well, I thought that was a good thing. Well, that is as far as I understood it. We had, of course, in our place, you know, the scout's place, there were pictures of Hitler hanging there. There was a picture of, now, what was his name? The youth leader. He was in charge of all the youth. Baldur von Schirach or something like this. We know he was the one who was in charge on the top for us. So, I mean, we had a lovely life. We were never, you must or you should. Or there was a certain discipline was there. It was fairly strict. You know, if you said you'd do something, you had to do it. If there was a meeting place at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, you have to do your best to be there. And if you were not there, you should at least give account why you were prevented from going there. I mean, discipline was there. You had to be tidy. Your shoes had to be clean. You know, and your fingernails had to be clean. I didn't see very much wrong with this because we had that at home anyway.
Did you have a uniform?
We had a uniform, yeah, that were sort of brown-looking shirts, and you had an armband. We were black corduroy trousers, shorts, and you had that belt with a buckle on them, I think it had a swastika on it. And you had your cap, and you had this cloth around your, I don't know what that was called. You know, with sort of a leather knot you put over it, like you see the scouts nowadays. Well, that was it. That was our uniform, yeah.
And you enjoyed it? I mean, no reason why not to.
I did enjoy it because I really liked the outdoors. I liked, you know, hiking off and having these long marches. We had our own pack to carry. And I remember the first few times when we went out for longer marches, us, the very young ones, we got easily tired. We couldn't carry this heavy pack. And the older ones always said, come on. And they took our pack and put it on top of their pack. so you could at least keep up, you know, the pace. We slept in tents. We had sometimes private quarters with farmers. We could sleep in the barn, in the straw or the hay. Occasionally, when they had enough room, we had little private quarters. And that was a really wonderful life. We had our sort of a cart where we had the tents on it, equipment on it, a big cooking pot and bits and pieces. And sometimes, you know, in the farm, either sleep in the barn, but to do the cooking we had to do obviously outside because of fire, and we did our own cooking. I don't think it was any Gordon Play cooking, but we were always starving, hungry, and whatever that was, we just scoffed it.
So you really enjoyed it. Now, yeah, did it become more military, more political, or was it, did it just stay like that, as far as you were concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, it stayed like that. I mean, I have heard and seen, read in books and see on television, you know, these big rallies when there were thousands and thousands of youngsters with flags and banners and all that. Well, I have never experienced that. Possibly because of the situation where we lived, you see, that wasn't.
Now, so you didn't see Hitler as a threat at the time, because to you he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. No, not to me.
Were you aware of some of the, what they now, you know, the anti-Semitism, things like that? Were you aware of anti-Semitism at the time?
Yes.
Difficult subject, obviously.
Yes. No, there is something which I remember, and it's probably written down in my autobiography there. It must have been later on, 36, 37-ish or thereabout, when my father had problems with a party or something. Now, I believe he was actually a member of the, well, let's call it the Nazi Party. You know, it was called NSDAP, the National Socialist Party of Germany, something like that. He became a member. I don't know why he became a member, but he did. But I remember he was in conflict with certain points with the party members. And he had to be careful, as I understand it, perhaps not to say too much, I don't know, because of his business. There were things going on. I knew this. One thing I definitely remember very, very clearly, as I said earlier on, my father had a shoe shop, which sort of gradually grew a little bigger. You know, he sold leather goods as well and sporting articles. He employed a cobbler to repair shoes and so. And he always had periodically a representative coming from one of these big shoe making firms, as it were, you know, where he bought his shoes from. And his name, I called him Uncle Hanf, because he was such a lovely fellow, and he always brought us a bag of sweets, you know, us children. And he came and talked to father, and they did their business, whatever. And then we always had a chat with him. He was a friendly man, he was nice, and we had our sweets. We called him Uncle Hanf. And suddenly, round about 36, 37, or thereabout, he didn't come anymore. Now, I didn't know why at the time, but of course, later on, quite much later on, after the war actually, I found out that this representative, Uncle Hanf, he was a Jew. So they must have taken him away.
But you weren't particularly aware of it?
Weren't particularly aware of it. I remember, to follow on what I just said, I believe it was in 1937, was it not? One day when we came home from school, we saw we had two shops in our town. One was quite a big shop. You could almost call it a very, very mini supermarket, a shop where you could buy almost everything, you know, goods, clothes, garden articles and whatever. And that was a Jewish concern. And there was another shop, I think it must have been books, papers, and whatever, in another road. And I remember that day when we came home from school and we saw all the windows smashed in that shop. And there were things pasted on, you know, Jews. And on the entrance door was sort of a wooden galley with a rope hanging down. I mean, I hadn't the faintest idea what it was about. And that big shop, the supermarket, which was sort of the other end of the town, was closed. Didn't exist anymore. That is, I remember. I was never told anything about anything at home. I only found these things out after the war, sort of when I read, you know, when I read about it and heard about it.